Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies. I talk about things that worked for me, but also share my big epic fails that I made and sometimes still make along the way, because I genuinely believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And that becomes vital in a world full of change, in a world of AI and machine learning, in a world where they will need that depth advantage. And before we get started, I just want to say thank you to everyone who has bought my book, The Depth Advantage. If you want to check it out, or if you want the free access to the course Empowered in a Year, you can buy the book and send me an email about it. You can go to depthadvantage.com and check it out. I also want to say thank you to everyone who has been at the PD that I've done this summer. I have had a jam-packed professional development schedule, traveling all around the US doing workshops, conference keynotes, coaching sessions, and I am just so encouraged by what I see and by the stories I hear and by the opportunity to meet so many educators from all around who are doing amazing work. And so if we met in person, I also want to say thank you so much for attending any of my PD. Without further ado, let's jump into today's podcast episode. So as I mentioned, throughout the summer, I've had the opportunity to lead professional development on ethical AI integration. And in some cases, it's been a keynote or customized session on how do we respond to the AI revolution, or what does it mean to have an AI roadmap. In many cases, it's been a deep dive 1 to 3 day workshop. Other times it's been about project-based learning, design thinking, student empowerment, deeper learning. But AI has been the context. It's defining how we work. And I think so even if I'm talking about vintage innovation, AI is ever present there, because it's this pervasive thing that's changing the way we think and the way we learn and the way that ultimately that we live. And one of the things that I'm struck by in talking to so many different educators is how many of them are being so intentional and creative in their approaches to AI. They're not merely reacting to it. They're not ignoring AI's presence. They're asking hard questions, discovering innovative solutions, and thinking ethically about what it means to teach in an era of intense change. And again, we are in this massive shift, not a subtle pivot point or gentle curve, but a full-on tectonic plate movement. AI is already transforming how we write, how we communicate, how we plan, even how we think. But with any disruptive change, the real challenge isn't just keeping up. It's slowing down long enough to ask better questions. What kind of learning do we want to protect? What human skills do we want to amplify? What do we risk losing if we chase efficiency at the expense of intentionality? And this, I think, is where a lot of educators have a unique opportunity. We can't ignore the changes, and we shouldn't. But we also don't have to sprint toward every shiny new tool. Instead, we can take a thoughtful, curious approach. Try things out, observe the impact, keep what works, leave what doesn't. The goal is not to reject AI or to embrace it blindly. It's to integrate AI wisely, always grounded in the kind of deep human-centered learning we know matters most. The shift is real, but we don't have to rush. We can lead with purpose rather than panic. So let's think about this. I think we can start with curiosity. For the longest time, I felt like I was ahead of the curve with tech. I avoided the fads, well, except for that one quarter when I went paperless, and a short period of time when I was obsessed with Wordle, which, by the way, used to be a tool rather than a game. But I would also adopt new technology if it could lead to deeper learning. I was all about a sort of critical view of tech. My background is not that I loved tech. I was not in the AV club when I was younger. We had a Tandy computer, but I never used it. I played some video games growing up, but I mostly read and drew pictures and wrote stories. And tech was never at the forefront of my mind. Like in college, I read Neil Postman and Marshall McLuhan and the poems of Wendell Berry, and I was maybe even tech critical. But when I saw that technology could enable things like documentaries and podcasts and blogging, that we could connect to the world, that we could create in a way that was faster and more efficient and cheaper, and yet still deeply human, I fell in love with tech. And I tried my hardest to keep up with it. And yet, generative AI caught me off guard. In 2017, when I first witnessed the newest iterations of generative AI and the whole notion of large language models, I was overwhelmed. I immediately started to ask, is this good or bad? Followed by, how do we leverage the strengths and avoid the weaknesses? But then I talked to an expert who said, what does all of this make you wonder? We then spent an hour talking about what it means to be human, how we use our tools, and how our tools transform our minds. It was a long view, full of rich history. And I left that meeting wondering if maybe I needed to start from a place of curiosity rather than critical analysis. I needed to ask questions and chase rabbit trails. Hey, Zeus. Buddy, can you sit down, please? Hey, good boy. I'll be done with the podcast in a second. Oh, where was I? I should edit this out, but you should know that I don't have a studio for my podcast. I have an office, and it's a home office in Zeus Magoose. My 140-pound, I think, Great Dane is generally very chill, but he got up for a second and wanted to say hi. I don't know if you can hear his collar and jingle jangle of the tags. But I think curiosity is something that we need. We need to explore AI. We need sandbox time to just play with it. And so it has me thinking about schools and districts. Yes, we need policies. True, we need meaningful professional development. But I wonder if maybe we also need playtime. What maybe we need a chance to just engage in prompt engineering and a chance to figure out what can it do, what can't it do, how does it work, and to go at it not from a lens necessarily of is it all good or is it all bad or how do we avoid cheating, but just spend time on our own playing with AI. I think it also helps in terms of curiosity to come up with a set of questions that you can ask and then engage in a Socratic seminar. I have a blog post that I linked to from the show notes, and it's all about this idea of seven different questions that you can ask before using AI. And I think that that's a good starting place as well. This stance of curiosity has the added bonus, honestly, of keeping us humble. The hard reality is that we cannot predict how technology will change our world. Few people knew that the bicycle would lead to the amplification of the suffrage movement. Few people could have predicted how social media would lead to things like filter bubbles and echo chambers and change attention spans and lead to this short-term dopamine spike that is affecting our youth. When we start out with questions like, what's going on here, we avoid the traps of techno-futurism and lock it and block it. We avoid the traps of saying it's all good or it's all bad. And I think it's important that we take an ethical approach. So what do I mean by the two dead ends? All right, let's look at that for a moment. The first dead end is techno-futurism. This is what happens when we start with the question, what can AI do that humans can't? And then scrap all of those things that machines can do and just avoid it. This dead end sees the promise of transformation, but sadly places technology as the driver of transformation rather than understanding that teachers transform the learning process. I've seen bold statements that AI will replace the essay or that we won't need teachers because students will simply use a chatbot and have self-paced content. Students will have personalized learning at their fingertips. But this dead end mistakes teaching for simply content delivery. And it doesn't understand that learning is simply deeply human, dynamic, and internal. It doesn't grasp the fact that we create our own learning on a regular basis. Deeper learning is often collaborative and creative. It requires problem solving. And when we mistake adaptive learning systems fueled by AI for personalized learning, our students end up at a huge disadvantage. But there's a second dead end. And this takes us in the opposite direction. This is the lock it and block it approach. Here, schools block all forms of AI. They move back to paper and pencil. They ban technology. I have seen this already. Today, I wrote about why I don't believe in AI detection software. And I posted it to my social media. I put it on Facebook. And I had several instant messages and one public comment that basically said, I'm just going back to paper and pencil. I'm tired of fighting it. I'm burned out. Academic dishonesty is a huge issue. And I think I understand where folks are coming from. I feel it in higher ed. I teach asynchronous courses. And yet, I think there are better options. We can lean into things like contextual understanding, empathy, unique voice, and those aspects, trust and transparency, that the machine can't do. You can't ask AI to reference something that was said in the Socratic seminar earlier or how this issue impacts your local school. And so I share this because I really believe that there's a third way, which is different than the lock it and block it. And this is ethical and intentional AI usage. This third approach avoids the extremes of both technofuturism and lock it and block it. It's human-driven to its core. And it's the overlap of AI with the human voice. This third way begins with the question, what does it mean to use AI ethically? And from there, it recognizes that we will likely change our use on a daily basis. Sometimes you're going to be pro-AI. Sometimes you're going to be anti-AI. Sometimes you're going to do AI-resistant things like what I just described, rewriting your prompts, or even using paper and pencil in some cases. Sometimes you're going to go AI-assisted, and you're going to use it for differentiated instruction, and you're going to create leveled readers and use it as a teacher for that way. But sometimes you're going to integrate it, and you're going to have students use AI as a curiosity tool or a co-creation tool. And I think it's important as we consider this realm of being AI integrated and to be ethical, that the goal isn't to compete with AI. It's to stay deeply human in how we teach and in how we learn. It often involves doing what Ethan Mollick describes as having cyborg and centaur approaches. So cyborg tasks are ones where you use AI and you partner with it. So you are amplifying the strengths of AI, but you're also being deeply human. You're not outsourcing your work to AI. It's a co-creation tool. It's a curiosity tool. It's a thought partner. That's how AI functions in those sort of cyborg moments. The centaur option is to basically say there are things I'm going to do that are human alone and things that I'm going to do that are machine alone, and I'm going to keep those separate. And there's a time and a place for that too. You know, you might have AI tools that do Dibbles testing for reading fluency, for example, or using it to analyze data, and you look at the report of the data and make decisions based on what it does, but it's not helping you make the decisions. You're making those on your own. And so I would say, as you approach this blended approach, so kind of thinking through this together as a school, you have started with curiosity, you've had playtime, you've engaged in conversation, You've then come up with your third way, your blended approach, and you've used this continuum that I share. And now you're going to start thinking, what are the tasks that I want to do from both a cyborg and a centaur approach? But as you do it, we can now move from sort of curiosity and play into a place that's a little bit more critical. We're going to engage in a bit of a critical analysis, and we're going to look at the pros and cons of AI. So we could start with the limitations and the concerns. AI struggles with context. It often defaults to the training data. It will essentially forget a correction you gave it a few prompts before, and it struggles to keep pace with information when you change your mind. It doesn't know how to read the room. It doesn't know your classroom. It doesn't know your community. It's also going to sometimes contain factual inaccuracies. Even when you set the temperature low and you prompt it for that, it will have what are called hallucinations, where it's just going to make crap up. And people have gotten into some big trouble with hallucinations. Lawyers and judges have used AI, and it's made up court cases that never existed. That's a problem. So we need to understand there will be times when we see factual inaccuracies popping up in generative AI. It also misses the deeply human elements that machines cannot replicate. It can't be creative. It can remix and reword, but it doesn't wrestle with ideas. It doesn't struggle through drafts or stare out the window waiting for a breakthrough. It mimics creativity, but it cannot originate anything truly unique. It can't engage in empathy. It has the ability to mimic empathy and to seem empathy. The tone might be warm. The phrasing might sound human, but it doesn't care. AI does not care about you. It's also important to understand that AI is going to have moments where it contains big bias. And yes, all information has bias, but some of these biases become racist, sexist. It is building on what is the most common training data, and therefore it's going to default to often power and privilege. And I think that's important to recognize. If you ask AI to generate an image of a left-handed painter, go try it. It's going to give you a right-handed painter every single time. It's no surprise then that AI can flatten cultural complexity. It can misrepresent communities. It can rely on biased data that doesn't actually reflect lived experience of students. So those things are very real, and we need to be cognizant of them. But we can also start to think about this idea of potential uses for AI. So again, what we've done is we've started with playtime. We've explored it. We've gone with curiosity. We've talked about this blended approach, this overlap of AI and human. We've looked at this continuum. We've looked at what it does well, what it does poorly. And now we can think about, given its strengths, what are the potential uses of AI? It is fantastic for learner supports, whether it's ELL structures, sentence stems, graphic organizers. It's great as a tool for students with executive function challenges, breaking down tasks, helping to come up with accommodations based on IEPs, although the data needs to be secure and you do not want any student data actually in any kind of generative AI. I want to be very clear on that. It can be a great co-creation tool. We can use it in every part of the writing process as teachers and students. And I have a whole podcast episode that you can check out related to that. It is a phenomenal study aid where you submit your work, it analyzes trends, it gives you informational text, you can ask it questions, it quizzes you, and you're basically using it to study. It's a phenomenal inquiry tool, whether you're using it for background knowledge, to understand skills, to fix misconceptions, to understand big concepts, but also things like interviewing a fictional historical figure. It's a great thought partner for research, for refining questions. It is a fantastic assessment tool for getting instant feedback and allowing students to ask the AI questions themselves, which then they get to generate it. They're more empowered along the way. It's also great with coming up with rubrics for you as a teacher using it in assessment. So there's a lot of assessment opportunities. It's a great productivity tool for parent for drafting parent emails or making rubrics, lesson outlines, all kinds of things like that. So in the end, we can start out by asking, what am I already doing, and build on it. Some of the most creative uses of AI might just come from the teachers down the hall. And so we can really build on this idea of, like, how do we use it ethically? What are some creative uses? And finally, we want to consider the role of policy. What are the district policies, school-wide policies? What are your state's policies? What are your national policies that guide you? And bring stakeholders into the conversation. In the end, I think it really comes down to this idea of starting out with intentionality. Here we are, right? A new year, school year is about to begin, and the ground is still shifting. Generative AI isn't some passing fad. It's a tool, a context, and in many ways, a mirror that reflects how we think and learn and create. But it doesn't have to take over. As educators, we get to decide how we respond and how we use it. We can lead with wisdom, not panic. We can make space for nuance, not quick fixes. And we can keep students at the center of all of it. I've seen some schools that seem worried about falling behind. Are we doing enough? Are we moving too slow? This is why I keep coming back to curiosity and conversation and thoughtful experimentation. We can listen to students. We can design learning experiences that are deeply human and genuinely innovative. We can create policies that are flexible and grounded and informed by the people who live this work every day. And most of all, we can remind ourselves that our goal is not to compete with AI. It is to cultivate thinking and creativity, empathy, connection, deeper focus and problem solving, and human communication. In other words, it can help us with the very things that make learning matter. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy it, would you leave a review in Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Amazon, wherever you listen to your podcast. Also, if you can share this podcast with a friend, word of mouth is still one of the best ways to find out about podcasts, and that would mean the world to me. And then finally, subscribe to it if you don't do that. And if you go to spencereducation.com, you can go to my newsletter, subscribe to that too, and you'll get all my latest updates. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.